The third case for oral argument this morning is Rosemary Armstrong and Alfie Peterson appellants versus the Turner County Board of Adjustment appellee. For the appellant, we have Mr. Paul Lindy, an attorney with the Schaefer Law Office in Sioux Falls. And for the appellee, we have Mr. Michael Henderson with the Cadwell Sanford firm, also from Sioux Falls. Mr. Lindy, you may proceed, sir, and you have 20 minutes.
If it pleases the court, Mr. Henderson, it's my honor today to be here representing two clients of mine, Alfie Peterson and Rosemary Armstrong. We're here today because we're the petitioners and the appellants from a decision from the Turner County Board of Adjustment that was taken up on appeal to the circuit court by way of a writ of certiorari. Judge Bjorkman was the trial judge that decided the petition for writ of certiorari and denied our request to reverse the Turner County Board of Adjustment's decision. This case has somewhat of a tortured history going through several different hearings before the Board of Adjustment, but I think to get to the basis, I think we need to understand something about this property. Alfie Peterson and Rosemary Armstrong are both from Vyberg, South Dakota. Rosemary owns a home in Vyberg. It's on the east side of the city, within the city limits. The elevator, the Vyberg elevator, bought some property in approximately 2006. The elevator purchased this property, and it's referred to in the record as the Vandershaft Edition. It's track B to the Vandershaft Edition. The elevator's property is approximately a 27-acre tract of land. When it purchased that property, it was outside the city limits, so it was zoned agricultural, by Turner County. At that time, the property located there was agricultural property. There was really nothing there. It was basically an alfalfa field. In about October of 2006, sometime before October of 2006, Craig Larson, the manager of the elevator, and on behalf of the elevator, he decided that the elevator was going to place a large commercial grain storage facility on this property. There was really no discussion prior to doing this with adjoining property owners. What he did is, you know, and it's getting towards harvest time, and they're going to need more room. So October 2nd, he went to the Turner County Planning and Zoning Office, and he met with the zoning administrator there. The zoning administrator said, well, fill out this building permit form, and you can request a building permit. About 3 or 4 days later, she issued a building permit to the elevator. So the elevator goes onto this property, and they pick a place on this 27-acre tract of land. And what they do is they go to the far west side of the property because they're using what they later find out is a private access road to fill the bunker. That's what their plan is to fill this bunker using this access road. And this bunker is a 100 by 250-foot bunker. So they go out and they pick a place, and where they start building this after they get the building permit is about 100 yards from the back door of Rosemary Armstrong's house. And as they progress, they're building this, Rosemary notices that, hey, there's people out there building. She calls the Planning and Zoning Office and tells them, you know, what's going on out there, raises some questions. About October 14th, the Planning and Zoning Administrator realized that she had issued this building permit in error. And it was an error because it was agricultural property, and a commercial grain storage facility, this 250,000 bushel facility, was not a permitted use in this agricultural property. So they had to apply for a conditional use permit, and the ordinances in Turner County require under a conditional use permit that you go before the Turner County Board of Adjustment, you have a hearing, interested people can appear, and they can object to it. So Ms. Doubleday, the zoning administrator, calls the elevator and says, you need to come and apply for a conditional use permit. They come in and apply for a conditional use permit. At that point in time, they had been working on this building, and they were building this at a pretty rapid speed to get it in place. So the elevator already had in place part of this building. And the interesting thing is they just kept building the building while they're waiting for this hearing. And I think the pictures and everything that's in the record will show that they just went ahead and filled this building while they're waiting for the hearing on the conditional use permit. So at that point in time, it goes through the process of the zoning administrator. They set up a hearing. The hearing's set for November 14th. A number of interested neighbors appear, and they object to the elevator putting this so close to the residential property. It's a large storage facility. At that point in time, the Board of Adjustment did not have Councilman Van Hove on it. At that point in time, the Board of Adjustment determined that there were certain requirements that weren't met. One of them was that the elevator at that time had not filed their plans in triplicate. So at that point in time, the elevator's conditional use permit was denied. And in fact, there's, and cited in our brief, there's some comments by one of the Board of Adjustment members that he had a little bit of trouble with this because they're trying to do some comprehensive planning in Turner County, and now we have basically a full commercial grain storage facility right by residential housing in Vibert, South Dakota.
Did they have a written denial in that hearing?
I don't think that they had a written denial. It was denied after the hearing at that time. So after that denial, the elevator then needed to apply for a new conditional use permit. But since they kept building on this property, Jeff Cole, who was the previous attorney for the petitioners in this case, contacted the Board of Adjustment and also the zoning administrator and the Turner County State's Attorney because construction continued and there wasn't a conditional use permit. And in a letter in November, I think it was November 30th, 2006, he faxes a letter to them and says, please tell the elevator to stop building on this property. They don't have the proper permits. After he sends that letter, he receives a call from Lyle Van Hove. Lyle Van Hove is a Turner County commissioner. He's been a Turner County commissioner for many years. I think he testified since approximately 1993. And he called Mr. Cole, and he also called Mr. McGill, who represented the elevator. And those two attorneys aren't involved because they both took themselves off of this case because they ended up basically providing testimony as witnesses. When Mr. Van Hove contacted Jeff Cole, he recognized that the zoning administrator had made an error in issuing this building permit, and he wanted to see, as a county commissioner, what he could do to resolve this or what the county could place on there for conditions to try to get this commercial grain storage facility to stay where it was, which was still 100 yards from Rosemary's property. In this discussion, Mr. Cole testified when he was at trial on the underlying action, he testified that Mr. Van Hove was concerned about the county's liability at that time, and he wanted to have some type of settlement in place. He also called Mr. McGill, the attorney for the elevator, and discussed the issues with him. Now, this is even contained in the court's findings that there was a discussion and there was concern. There was a discussion between Mr. Cole, Mr. McGill, and Mr. Van Hove, and it was in regard to concern over the county's potential liability for the error of the zoning administrator.
What is wrong, though, with an elected official trying to resolve a problem within its jurisdiction?
Well, Your Honor, that in and of itself...
I can understand it if you'd only gone to one side, but he goes to both sides and says, what can we do to fix this?
Well, he was contacting Mr. Cole to try to resolve it, to see what we could place on the conditional use permit as conditions, because basically saying it's going to stay there, what conditions is your client going to agree to? And secondly, if that was all he was going to do was sit on the county commission, that probably wouldn't be a problem. But he hadn't yet at that point been appointed onto the Board of Adjustment, but he was going onto the Board of Adjustment in January of 2007. So moving back, so I think if you're going to sit on a hearing and you're going to also try to settle that case and show that your position is that we want that there because we have concern regarding the county liability, I think that shows that you're going to have a conflict when you're considering this. I mean, you want somebody who's purely neutral.
Did he know when he contacted the two attorneys that he was going on the Board of Adjustment?
I believe he knew that he was going on the Board of Adjustment because he was going to take the place of Richard Lounsbury, who was the other commission member on the Board of Adjustment. He was the designated commission member on the Board of Adjustment. So ultimately, the elevator filed a new conditional use permit in December 13, 2006, and in this conditional use permit, they finally got the information right that they filed, and in this information, they requested a conditional use permit for another 250,000 bushel grain storage facility. And it's interesting, in their plan where they requested this second facility that hadn't been built, it was directly to the south of the facility that they had built. And one of the later findings that we'll discuss is that the Board of Adjustment required them to move that directly over to the east further because it wouldn't be a good place for it to the south. But the Board of Adjustment never once thought, well, gee, this one 100 yards from Rosemary's house should be moved. They essentially said, well, it's already built, so we'll leave it there, and we'll make them put the new one even further to the east.
What relief, then, if it was already built, did you seek in front of Judge Bjorkman? Did you want it torn down?
I think, what did we seek from Judge Bjorkman?
Relief, yes.
What relief? Well, here is our position, Your Honor, is that we were an opponent to a Board of Adjustment hearing. Our position was, is we wanted a fair and impartial tribunal to determine, is that a proper place for a grain storage facility? If there was mistakes in regard to where that was originally placed, that is not our concern. What our concern at that stage is, what did the ordinance require? What should the zoning board do in placing this grain storage facility? Now, if the elevator has to tear that down, that's not really of our concern. Now, the elevator at the hearing put on substantial evidence, and the hearing I'm referring to is the January 9th, 2007 hearing. I'll call it the second Board of Adjustment hearing. They put on substantial evidence of basically an estoppel argument that, well, we relied on the county. We relied on the county's building permit. And interesting to note, you know, you think about it, and a lot of people might not understand the Supreme Court's decisions or have knowledge of the decisions, but the evidence in the record shows, and this was at trial, in the certiorari trial, I asked Mr. Van Hove if he was aware of a problem in Parker where there had been a building permit issued on a pole building, and it's a reported decision by this court, Even versus the City of Parker, 1999 decision. And he said, yeah, I was aware of that decision. And I specifically asked him, they built a pole barn and they got to keep that building in the City of Parker, didn't they? And he knew all about that decision. So this wasn't a person that this argument was being lost on. And secondly, the arguments put forth by the elevator at the board hearing, the second hearing, were essentially that we put $40,000 into this thing, the zoning administrator screwed up, we will put trees, we will do whatever. And when it got to the end, and Mr. Van Hove, who was adversarial throughout this whole hearing, when he got to the end of the hearing, he pointedly asked Faye Doubleday, the zoning administrator, Faye, did these guys have a good faith belief when they left your office that they had a building permit? And of course she says yes, that they had that belief. And I think cited in our brief, there's a case from Alaska, Fields versus Kodiak City Council, that's not even an issue for a Board of Adjustment to consider. I mean, they have no equitable powers, so there's no estoppel arguments. What they're supposed to do, they're supposed to sit there and determine what is the proper land use decision. Ultimately, Mr. Van Hove moved to approve the conditional use permits and he had conditions that he placed on that property. And the conditions that he suggested were all things like plant trees to the west of the storage facility, load from a certain area, things like that. You know, the one thing that was never thought of or mentioned was that we have 27 acres of land. Why don't we have them move that farther away so this storage facility that's, you know, being aerated with fans isn't running 100 yards from my client's house? But that was never thought of. And it's our contention it was never suggested that because that would have cost the elevator money to move that. And I'm sorry it would have cost the elevator money, but that wasn't an issue before the board. What the issue was is what's the proper land use decision.
So how many members of the Board of Adjustment voted in favor of the elevator?
It was unanimous.
How many members is that?
I believe it's 7 members of the Board of Adjustment.
7. So you have 6 beyond Mr. Van Holt's vote.
Correct.
Do you have any complaint with the other 6?
No, I don't have a complaint with the others. However, and I understand that it could be said basically that, well, you know, even if Mr. Van Hove hadn't voted, it was still would have passed. And his decision really can't be looked at, or his conflict can't be looked at. But I think this court's decision in Hannig specifically recognized that the remedy for a due process violation is clearly that the only way to remove the taint is to remand completely for a new trial under or before a disinterested board. Because what happens is that once you have a conflicted person on there, then it essentially taints the whole board. So I think under Hannig, even though you did have a majority, and even if not all of them had a conflict, you still get a remand because of the due process violation, which was a conflict.
In Hannig, we adopted those 4 categories of conflict. Which would it fit in this case? Because, you know, the direct pecuniary interest, the indirect pecuniary interest, personal interest and indirect personal interest. Does it fit under either one, any of those as far as the conflict is concerned?
Your Honor, the 4 categories from Hannig basically are the direct pecuniary interest. Understandably, Mr. Van Hove was going to receive no financial benefit individually himself. Now we look at the indirect pecuniary benefit, or pecuniary interest, I'm sorry. Basically, how I look at that, and I think it fits under that situation, because the trial court essentially said, well, he's a political official. He wasn't going to receive any financial benefit himself from this, so there really was no conflict. But if you look at the indirect pecuniary conflict scenario, it's when you're not obtaining that financial benefit yourself. What you're trying to do is you're basically advocating for somebody because your indirect interest is their financial benefit. So if the county here, and everybody knew that the county, if they granted that conditional use permit, and Mr. McGill, the attorney for the elevator, I took his deposition and it's in the record, he testified that they had filed a notice of review when we filed our petition for writ of certiorari, and they essentially didn't have to worry about that because the conditional use permit was granted with these minor conditions and nobody had to move any of the material. But in any event, going back to your question, this indirect benefit is that he was providing the county, a person he was, you know, a county official for, and as county commissioner, the benefit of granting this conditional use permit, which is aligned with the benefit of the elevator, so that there wouldn't be any county liability.
But doesn't every politician have that same conflict then?
Not necessarily. I mean, he was in a unique position. I mean, he was a county commissioner. He'd been notified that there was potential county liability because they had granted this building permit. It was essentially built after this building permit. Now, he then becomes actively involved in trying to resolve this, calling the attorneys, telling them what kind of conditions would you have or what kind of conditions would you agree to so we can have this conditional use permit. At the hearing, he ultimately determines what conditions were going to be put on this conditional use permit and moves to have it passed with those specific conditions.
Change the facts. I mean, suppose he ran for election and said, you know, I'm going to get this straightened out. Vote for me because I'm going to get this thing worked out to save you taxpayers money.
Well,
you say that's a conflict too then?
No, I think it's a little bit confusing because, you know, he was going to consider this specific issue at a, you know, it's an adjudicatory hearing. It's not any legislative matter. It's a hearing before him. He's considering the specific law to the specific facts. And the law is, of course, the zoning ordinances. And he had to determine whether it was proper, you know, whether that was a proper decision. So if he already took a position on that, he can't prejudge that matter and have a conflict with it.
Isn't there some discretion, though, that the board has some discretion in deciding whether or not the conditional use permit would be granted?
I'm out of time, Your Honor. Do you want me to answer?
Yes, go ahead, and then I've got another question for you.
Yeah. Is there discretion?
Yes, there is discretion. I mean, there is discretion in interpreting their zoning ordinances. There's no doubt about that. But they cannot disregard their zoning ordinances.
Say that a law passes the legislature 105-0 after it's passed, one legislator is determined to have a conflict of interest. Similar to Mr. Van Hoe, do we throw the law out because 104 other people were involved in it?
Well,
they're public.
You're saying if the legislature determines something?
Yes, if they pass the law 105-0 and it turns out after the law is passed, one legislator had a Van Hoe conflict. Is the law subject to challenge because one legislator had a conflict of interest?
No, it's not. And a conflict is a much different thing under legislative and rulemaking than it is under adjudicatory hearing. And that's the Stauffer-Hand decision recognizes that.
All right. Thank you. Your time has expired. Mr. Henderson, you have 20 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, Mr. Lindy. Your Honors, I am here today representing the Turner County Board of Adjustment, who is the respondent and appellee in this matter. I want to first talk about the conflict of interest issue that's raised by Mr. Lindy.
Do you agree this is an adjudicatory rather than a legislative duties that this Board of Adjustment has?
Yes, I do agree with that. With respect to the conflict of interest issue or the due process issue, as it's been characterized, I want to begin by saying that a few things are undisputed here. One is that Mr. Van Hoeve had no personal or no business interest in seeing the elevator obtain a conditional use permit. He didn't store grain at the elevator. He didn't do business with the elevator. He wasn't a member of the elevator association. He didn't stand to profit or to lose any money as a result of the grant or denial of the conditional use permit.
I suppose the taxpayers had some potential exposure, though, if the county was liable. The taxpayers pay the bill, right?
That's absolutely. I think it's making a giant leap to assume the county could be liable, but if that were the case, I think every taxpayer in the county would stand in that same position and have some potential interest in that regard.
But is it a giant leap in this case, where, as I understand it, the testimony is that that was this commissioner's concern, liability?
There's been testimony, and Mr. Lindy has argued that, you know, that Mr. Van Hoeve was aware of the Even versus City of Parker case. And the building permit in that case that was granted, and later this court determined that the city in that case was stopped from later denying a conditional use permit after previously granting a building permit. I think one thing that's important to remember about Even, however, is it's not a case in which it's an estoppel case, but it's not a case in which somebody sought affirmative relief in the form of damages. There were no damages awarded in that case. What simply happened was this court, and the trial court, I believe, as well, determined that the city was stopped from denying the conditional use permit in that case. So I don't know that there's any authority that would suggest that the county could be liable to the elevator in this situation. Certainly there's authorities to suggest that the elevator may have had an argument that, hey, you gave us a building permit, we relied on that, now you're estopped from denying the conditional use permit.
That's the law. I'm talking about the factual record in this case. Doesn't the factual record in this case reflect that Van Hove was concerned about county liability?
I think there's been some mention of that. I think that was Mr. Cole's testimony. In terms of Mr. Van Hove's testimony, essentially what his concern was that a county official, somebody with the county, here the planning and zoning administrator, made a mistake. And he was concerned about the fact that a mistake was made.
When he was concerned about that, he has his county commission hat on. But he doesn't take that hat off when he sits as a board of adjustment, as an adjudicatory body. Isn't that the concern you have here? And he was negotiating between the parties. He doesn't reveal that necessarily in the hearing. And he doesn't take his the problem is here, he doesn't take his county commission hat off when he walks into the board of adjustment. And that is, in this case, not generally maybe, but in this case, that is a problem.
I think in terms of what Mr. Van Hove did in terms of talking to the attorneys for both the elevator and the Rosemary Armstrong.
He doesn't reveal that, does he?
I don't think there's any indication in the record that he reveals that. There's also, no indication that this was anything beyond simply saying. I mean, look, the reality here was the Board of Adjustment had kind of a sticky situation on its hands with this conditional use permit. And I think it was clear from everybody.
Is that actually true? Because the Board of Adjustment has to look at what the rules are and follow the rules. Isn't that what the whole idea of having a Board of Adjustment set up by statute? Is that the County Commission legislates, they pass the zoning, the Board of Adjustment sits to see that if somebody wants a conditional use permit, that you follow the rules that the County Commission has already established in the zoning rules. I mean, should that have been, isn't then there a problem if they're worried about other things other than implementing those rules?
I think that what I'm getting at, Justice Meyer Henry, is you're absolutely right that it is the role of the Board of Adjustment to apply the zoning rules and determine whether under those rules this scenario calls for grant of a conditional use permit. But it was clear that this was a contentious matter, I guess is what I'm getting at, and everybody on the Board of Adjustment understood that, just simply by the number of hearings and attorneys appearing before the board. This was a contentious matter that was going to end up in circuit court regardless of whether the permit was granted or denied. So I think the idea that Mr. Lindy has argued on behalf of Rosemary Armstrong that the simple solution here for the Board of Adjustment and for Mr. Van Hove was to just grant the permit and then the problem goes away. The reality is, whether the permit was granted or not, this was going to end up in circuit court because there was strong feelings on both sides and time and investment on both sides. And that's what happened, obviously, and that's why we're here.
Did they ever make a finding? They kept sending or they kept revising their findings, didn't they, so that they kept omitting things and then they tried it again. Did they ever make a finding, even in the final analysis, that it was compatible with residential?
They did make the finding, and I'll acknowledge that the finding is not as artfully drafted as it could have been. But in the findings, there was an express finding that it was compatible with adjoining property. It doesn't specifically mention residential property, but it does.
Why they would have found it compatible with residential?
There is some discussion of that in the transcripts. I think that if you look at the transcripts and the various conditions that were placed upon the grant of the conditional use permit, all of those things were concerned with trying to make sure that it didn't infringe on adjoining landowners, in particular residential property. So that was certainly something that was kind of at the forefront of the Board of Adjustment. The findings, aren't artfully drafted, but they do make an express finding of compatibility.
But is that kind of conclusory finding inadequate? I mean, that's really the ultimate conclusion of law, that it's compatible. I don't see anything in here except perhaps it meets setbacks, and I don't know what that, if that relates to the other three properties or if that relates to the residential property, I can't really tell.
I think to answer your question, Justice Idra, I think that it is sufficient. Certainly, the findings are required by the zoning ordinances. But in this particular situation, I think it's important to remember the scope of the court's review on a writ of certiorari, in that the court, you know, looks to whether the board had jurisdiction, whether the board pursued its authority in a regular manner. And basically, the board's decision should be sustained unless the board has done something that is forbidden by law or has failed to do something that is required by law. Now, here the zoning ordinances certainly require that there be fine findings regarding these things. It is a conclusory finding. I would agree with that without a whole lot of analysis there. But it is a finding, and it is an express finding. And if you look at the transcripts, it's clear that based upon the conditions imposed, that the impact on the residential property was something that was kind of at the forefront of consideration for the Board of Adjustment.
Doesn't that leave us sitting here, though, kind of scratching our heads, you know, compatibility? Well, you can imagine during harvest season when everybody's lined up to dump but their crops, and you got noise, you got dust. I don't know if they run 24 hours a day there during harvest or, you know, I'm assuming it's not an 8-hour day, 5 days a week. And here you're sitting in a residence neighboring to it. Aren't we entitled to something a little bit more than just compatible?
Well, I think if you look at the, I think you'll see more than just a simply express finding if you look at the transcripts as well. In particular, there was the idea that there was testimony from, for example, the police chief in the city of Vicksburg, to the effect that he believed that this was a good solution because, as it currently stood, all of that farm traffic, and particularly during harvest time, was essentially routed through Main Street and through the middle of town to the elevator. And this solved that problem, and in the opinion of the police chief who testified at the hearing before the Board of Adjustment.
Well, it might have solved his problem, but it certainly doesn't go to the compatibility with the residential property, though, does it?
Well, I think that I think the point there is that it was for the greater benefit of public safety. Certainly, it doesn't go particularly to Rosemary Armstrong's residence, but in all of these things, and that's why the board does have discretion. There's a weighing and a balancing of pros and cons. I think that his testimony was not that this is an ideal solution for everybody, but this is a better solution from a greater overall public good and public safety standpoint than routing all of these grain trucks through the middle of town, which certainly
understand
would impact
that
other residences as well.
Do the rules, though, require when they give a conditional use permit that they do make a finding that all of the surrounding it is compatible with the surrounding property?
Yes, the rules do.
So they do have, they can't avoid that and say, well, we know it's not compatible with one side, but because the police chief thinks it's safer, we can ignore that part of it. Can they ignore that part of it?
They are required by the rules to consider the issuability of compatibility with adjoining landowners, adjoining land, and are required to make findings in support of their conditional use permit. So I don't think that, and I'm not arguing that they can avoid that. I'm simply stating that in all of these things, there's a total balancing of the public good and not just the impact on one particular landowner.
Does the balancing be affected by the fact that your people were put on notice at least partially during the construction and you just kept on going?
To answer your question, Your Honor, the Turner County Board of Adjustment is my client, and obviously the elevator kept on going. And I think there's testimony at the petition for certiorari, the trial, that Mr. Van Hove in particular was not very happy with the way that the elevator had handled that and the fact that that work appeared to be continuing to be done.
Doesn't that again go to his conflict and the going back to where you stated that he didn't have any ownership in the elevator, but he was a county official. He had fiscal responsibility for the county, and they were, if you term it as great or slight potential risk of being a defendant, wasn't the county very much, and he had fiduciary responsibility for the county? Why isn't that a conflict when he then goes into a quasi-judicial role and has participated as a county commissioner?
I think it had fiscal
liability.
I think that two things, Justice Severson, in response to your question. One, if you look at the four types of conflicts that were identified in the Hannig decision,
that's what I'm talking about.
And I know that's where you're going. I think that the only way that it becomes a conflict, and if you make that conclusion that it's a conflict, is if you determine that the county here is an interested party in this particular case. And if the county is an interested party, I don't see how any county official does not have that same conflict of interest, or at least the appearance of that conflict, whether they are.
But none of these people, who else is on the Board of Adjustment?
The Board of Adjustment is comprised of a number of individuals that are appointed by the County Commission.
Yeah, but they're not county employees, are
there
they?
They are not county employees, no. And you know, Mr. Van Hove is not an employee either. He's an elected official.
And actually, isn't there a system, as I remember reading it, isn't there a system set up that if one has a conflict of interest, there's an alternate that can step in? So it isn't like they couldn't have proceeded
right without
him.
There are two alternates. In my understanding, is one of the alternates is also a county commissioner. And how it's done is their typical setup is that they have one county commissioner who sits on the Board of Adjustment. And so if Mr. Van Hove would recuse himself, or was asked to recuse himself, which didn't happen here, typically what would happen is the other county commissioner that's an alternate would sit in his place. You'd still have a county commissioner on the as a decision maker. It's important
to assume we find that he had a conflict. You know, would it have solved it if he would have just said right away to everybody involved, I've been involved in this. I've talked to both parties. I'm really concerned about the liability for the county. Would that have solved it if he had just said it and put it on the table? And then if one or the other party would have said, you know, knowing that you've got this coming in here, we're really asking that maybe you step aside and not be part of this Board of Adjustment decision.
Well, I think that in this particular case, he wouldn't have, if he had done that, and I understand that.
I thought he admitted talking to both of them.
He acknowledged talking to both of them, yes. But if he had, I'm saying, what if he had said that and mm-hmm. laid that out and said, look, I've talked to both of these people, I don't know that he necessarily would have been. I mean, Mr. Cole, representing both Rosemary Armstrong, was certainly aware of his conversation and never asked that Mr. Van Hove recuse himself. Mr. McGill,
he didn't know he was also negotiating with the other side, did he?
I don't think that the record is entirely clear on that. At some point, he found that out, and I'm not sure exactly when. But he certainly knew that Mr. Van Hove had approached him or had talked to him and told him, look, is there, and essentially, you know, the nature of that conversation from the testimony is, are there any conditions that we can put on this that your client would accept and no longer challenge this? And, you know, there wasn't any fact-finding or anything like that going on in that situation. So I don't know that really there would have been anything. You know, Mr. Cole and Mr. McGill certainly were aware of that, of their conversations they had with Mr. Van Hove. And still nobody asked him to recuse himself, either at the January hearing or even, you know, when we go fast forward to October of 2007 when there's the second hearing, you know, 9-10 months had passed since that time, and still nobody asked him to recuse himself.
Did anybody suggest during any of the hearings that they didn't think he was being fair, that he was, like, counsel said that he was being adversary. Anybody suggest that to him?
I don't think that there's that the characterization of him as being adversarial is a fair and accurate portrayal, and I don't think that anyone accused him of doing that during the scope of the hearings. There were certainly situations where I think, you know, at one point Mr. Van Hove said, well, I don't think that that's – I can't remember the exact context, but I don't think that one particular thing is relevant here, and Mr. Cole disagreed with that. And there was some exchange in that nature. But I don't think anything that was really out of the ordinary or outside the normal scope of a decision-maker sitting in a quasi-adjudicatory role asking questions and trying to get to the bottom of the issues and the facts before him. I don't have much time left, but I'd also like to briefly touch on the second argument that Rosemary Armstrong has made, which is essentially that I'm not sure how to characterize it other than it's essentially an invitation to kind of second guess the board's decision. The argument basically is that the board did something forbidden by law because they didn't adequately consider the overall purpose of the zoning ordinances or the compatibility issue. And the argument is basically this decision was so wrong they must not have really considered these things or must not have adequately considered them. And I think that's a slippery slope in which Ms. Armstrong is essentially, you know, inviting the court to open the door and to questioning the correctness of the findings, which is something that this court has said in Hines and in other cases that they're not is not the proper rule on review on certiorari. So I would, for those reasons, I'm apparently about out of time, but for those reasons, unless I have any further questions from the court, I'd ask that the decision by the trial court be affirmed.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Henderson. Mr. Lind, you have 10 minutes, sir.
Mr. Lindy, before you get started, I want to get something cleared up that's of concern to me. You know, I realize this is a board of adjustment and a county commissioner, and the county commission can make a decision whether or not they want to act as a board of adjustment. But county commissioners have other quasi-judicial functions, and what we do in this case is going to set a rule for the future, just like Hainig did for in cities, and now we're in a county case. How do you square what you're asking us to do with the county's duty, to legislative duty, to go out and meet their constituents and look at problems? Well, you know, and they may not know that there's going to be some kind of an adjudicative dispute later on. It seems to me that we could easily disqualify county commissioners from being able to do anything as far as the usual types of things that I guess the public expects them to do. Meet with them, talk with them.
Well, there's a number of ways around that. I think the Board of Adjustment, in their specific role for the Board of Adjustment, I think they're free to go out and look at that property. You know, that's not improper. It might even be okay to have a discussion regarding what's your plan in the future. I mean, they are a lay board. They can have some activity. The answer to the problem lies in this, and that's disclosure by any county commissioner who might think that he has a conflict. I mean, there's already a recusal procedure, it's my understanding, under the statute. The Turner County Board of Adjustment followed this, and Mr. Van Hove testified that he had taken himself off.
There is for boards of adjustment, but this case is going to be used in for other local government subdivisions.
And I guess the simplest way is to have disclosure, full disclosure at the time. The problem with Mr. Van Hove in this situation is when I asked him at the trial, he denied that he even spoke to Mr. Cole. The trial court found otherwise. The trial court found in its findings that he had had a conversation with Mr. Cole and believed Mr. Cole's testimony on that issue. And also, Mr. Van Hove testified he didn't think he had a conflict. So I think if there can be something put forth that basically is emboldened that if you think you have a conflict, recuse yourself, you know, take yourself off of it, or fully disclose that you have a conflict. And for example, the Hannick case was a liquor license case, and I guess I'm not aware of any serious problems that have arisen out of you know, the liquor license or the city council members making sure that they're free of any conflicts when they're considering a liquor license. And, you know, those are typically small towns. So, I think the answer is basically putting the burden on the county official that if he is going to be faced with an issue where he's going to protect the county's interest and it might conflict with some adjudicatory hearing he's going to do, then he needs to, at a minimum, disclose that or take himself off of it. In regard to the findings Mr. Henderson discussed with the court, it's interesting on the findings because there was a January 9th, 2007 hearing. We petitioned for a writ of certiorari February 9th, 2007. Mr. Cole took himself off the case. I substituted as counsel for Mr. Cole. Before that, Mr. McGill had taken himself off the case, and he understood that he was going to be a witness because of the contact by Mr. Van Hove. We get into some depositions in the summer of 2007 at that point in time, and then the Board of Adjustment, when we already have a scheduling order in place on the certiorari, the Board of Adjustment, all of a sudden they issue a notice that they want to have a rehearing to fix the findings. And we go to the rehearing, we provide additional evidence that this isn't compatible property. We have the former Director of Equalization for Turner County testify at the board hearing on October 9th, 2007. And still after that hearing, the finding that comes back is two words, is compatible. I mean, that was their conclusion as to compatibility, is compatible.
Well, I don't read it that way, or maybe I'm looking at the wrong one. The finding 16 that I'm looking at says that they talk about the properties to three sides, and I don't think there's a dispute about compatibility there. And then with respect to residential, on the second set they say this is residential to the west, meets setbacks. And then they say like property on three sides. So aren't they essentially saying, if you look at the overall picture, you know, this is compatible because of the setbacks and because it met because it was compatible with the other three commercial or other type properties?
I think so. I mean, they may have been attempting to do that. It's not very clear. The strange thing is that they're back in to fix the findings and they're more confusing when we get done with them. But there was two separate findings on compatibility. If my recollection, there was a number 9 on compatibility, and then later on there was like a 16 where they just wrote is compatible. So it's confusing what they were trying to do in regard to that. You know, what they ultimately never did is they never fixed the problem. I mean, you know, it's like putting a washcloth on an elephant and saying it's not there. You know, just move the thing over, but they would never require that. They would do all of this to try to make it compatible. So I guess I'm not understanding if I'm answering the question correctly, but I think their compatibility is confused in what they were trying to do, because I think that what they were trying to do in the end is saying, well, this is okay with residential property as long as we put these conditions on it. And anyway, if it's not okay, we have areas around it that are fairly compatible with this conditional use. I mean, I think that's what they were trying to do in their findings. It's just surprising that it couldn't get done. You know, they have a state's attorney and somebody who could have assisted them. In regard to their findings, there is one thing that I pointed out in the brief. Specifically, the The ordinances require that the Board of Adjustment make a finding that it's empowered to make this decision, and its decision is consistent with the intent of the zoning ordinances. And if you look at the intent of the zoning ordinances in Turner County, it's for the orderly development of property. And this was, if we go back to the first hearing in November of 2006, this was what one of the board members at that time said. You know, we have a problem because this thing got put on our lap and it's too close to this residential property. And I don't think there's ever been a finding that this was consistent with the intent of orderly development of property in Turner County. And in fact, the problem arises because why it isn't is because it's not orderly development, because Craig Larson, the then manager of the elevator, in the last minute right before harvest, determined that, oh, there's a road over here, a private road that we're going to use, so we're going to stick this facility on this 27 acres, we're going to stick it as close as possible to residential housing. Now, how is it consistent to have the Board of Adjustment consider this? And our position is, based upon the potential county liability, determine that we can put some trees in between this, but we don't have to move it, and it's still orderly, consistent growth in Turner County, even though it's right next to this residential property. And in fact, to emphasize that, when they made their plan for the second storage facility, which wasn't built yet, when they put that plan in at the second hearing, they made them move that away. And the reason they made it move, because it was too close to that residential property. But they didn't dare claim or make them move that first storage facility because they had already had that sea stone down and it would have cost money to move that storage facility. I'm running short on time, and I thank you for granting oral argument in this case. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Lundy. Court will be in recess.
You're listening to oral arguments of the South Dakota Supreme Court. The court is in recess and will resume shortly. For more information about the court, please log on to www.sdjudicial.com.